It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the last show of 2016. Andy Iannocco, Renee Ritchie, and Alex Lindsay are here. Tim Cook talked to Apple employees, actually typed to Apple employees, and we'll take a look at what he said, what he implied. Is Pokemon Go coming to the Apple Watch or not? Renee Ritchie has a scoop and a whole lot more. It's coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 538, recorded Tuesday, December 20th, 2016. Hashtag Make Apple Great Again. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Away Luggage. Away makes first-class luggage at coach prices that allow you to charge your phone on the go. For $20 off your order, go to awaytravel.com/MacBreak and use the promo code MacBreak at checkout. And by Pearl Auto. Pearl Auto makes Rear Vision, a set of wireless backup cameras for your car that fit around your license plate and sync with your smartphone. To get $50 off your Rear Vision, go to pearlauto.com/twit. And by Rocket Mortgage. By Quicken Loans, Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the latest Apple news brought to you fresh every week. Well, unless something, this is kind of straight out of John Oliver. Unless something happens on Tuesday afternoon, in which case it'll be kind of stale by the time we do it Tuesday morning. Hey, he's back. Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Core. Hey, Alex.
Hello.
Good to see you.
Good to be here.
Yes. You know, for once, Andy Iannocco might have a one-up on you. Andy Iannocco is also here from the Chicago Sun-Times. And I know from his Instagram, he is in proud possession of Obama Hershey Kisses.
I do not have any Obama Hershey Kisses, I will admit.
Straight off Air Force One.
I will say though, they are like Schrodinger's Hershey's Kisses, because I don't think many people actually open these up. I think that they're like, okay, I've got to get this beautiful box like with Obama's signature on it and the presidential seal. Like, I can buy Hershey's Kisses at the airport. So I think my theory A is that they're actually made out of wax to make them stable for 100 years, or second, as a joke, they put a little coupon that says this coupon is good for one presidential pardon for any crime below murder. Ooh. Knowing that in 8 years, no one has ever like found it and then actually cashed it.
There could be a golden ticket in there. You do say in your Instagram, why do they even bother? You could show this, Carson. Why do they even bother to fill these with candies? Because you're right. No one is going to open that. You're going to want that pristine. That's a collector's item. Imagine 100 years from now. The candy will be stale, but the signature is fresh as...
It's a nice little souvenir. You should have special like twit. You should have special like twit like twit nerds candy boxes.
You got a
with
good,
like your signature and the twit seal.
I
on them.
Should do that. You're Absolutely. Right. You got a very nice tour. It looks like there's the presidential seal. Is that the West Wing?
Yes, and yes, when you tour the White House, you find yourself replaying every scene from the TV show.
Yeah.
When we're walking down the part of, I don't know what the name of the walkway that the president uses to get from the residence to the office, I was singing "You Make Me Egg Foo Young." And that scene where he and Mrs. Bartlett were after mass. Yes, exactly.
Oh, I love it. I love your caption here. A big fan of my Sun-Times column invited me to visit his house when I was in town. He moved from Chicago a while ago, but he keeps reading me online. I love that. Very cute. Also, here, Renee Ritchie of iMore.com, and he looks like he's bundled up for a typical Montreal winter. Wow.
Oh, it's the first cold of the year, Leo, because you're not prepared. By February, this will be fine, but right now, those Arctic winds, they sting.
It hurts, doesn't it?
Does my blood got thin over the summer?
I didn't really know that cold could hurt until I went to Toronto, and then I understood.
-40, you go outside, your face hurts, and you feel the liquid in your head starting to freeze. So you want to run as fast as you can.
Yeah, terrible. Let's see here. Has anybody got the actual production AirPods yet?
people are getting. Oh, there you go. Renee's got them, because that's not fair, because you had the pre-pro model too. Now you have a fresh model.
Yeah, and the retail, I mean, like they're everywhere now. People are getting the pre-orders already. The people who ordered right away have gotten shipments already. So they're out there now.
I heard the stores are sold out, though.
They're getting incremental, depending on where you are, depending how big the market is, sometimes depending on the weather, because the weather hasn't been inducive for rapid shipment right now. You can find them in stores, and they will be trickling in over the rest of the week.
I wonder if I should wander down to my Apple store. What's the best way to handle that?
Yeah, just get to the Apple store early to catch the morning shipments. And then if you miss out on those, I mean, they let people buy two at a time. And I don't think most people really want two at a time. So you're dealing with a lot of eBay scalpers. But then check again after lunch, because that's when the second shipment will arrive.
Yeah.
Best Buy, some carrier stores get them in. So if you know a bunch of news sites on Twitter that you can follow, sometimes they'll let you know immediately when they're available.
Yeah, I've been done in our chat room saying that Best Buy had them last night.
Yeah, and I think AT&T or Verizon had them this morning.
You can also, like, if you don't have any for sale at the Apple store, just like keep walking the sidewalk outside. You'll probably find three or four of them.
They're all left, though. They're all left.
Yeah. Especially near games.
Sorry, you want to spritz out the earwax, but that's about it.
Actually, I haven't lost one. And I, like, Georgia will tell you, because she was mentioning this, I'll lose an iMac. Like, I'll come in, I don't know where the iMac went. What happened to it? And I haven't lost one in 3 months. And I was petrified that I would lose it. But because they get, like, they just suck back into that case, and it's such an enjoyable. Like, they built the experience so enjoyably, you want to put them in there and you want that sort of feeling. So you're tacitly rewarded for putting them away. And then you have this giant capsule, and it's much harder to lose.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm more worried about, like, so I wear like a really thick scarf, like, in the winter. And sometimes, like, when it's super, super cold, like, I will just say, I need this as my titanium against death. And I'm worried about, like, brushing against, like, the dangly part of the headphone and being knocked off, like, when I'm paused or something. So I'm glad that Apple will sell you just one left or just one right if you lose one, yes, though, for like $70.
I'm worried about hoodies. Like, I was very careful taking a hoodie on and off, because that felt like it could hit it. But it was loud enough playing that I knew the second it had been dislodged.
I'm not too excited about the long little thing sticking out. I'd rather just fill my ear.
Renee had him when he was down here, and it didn't look as bad as I expected it to.
No,
it's not the look. It's just that I'd rather have it more self-contained.
Yeah.
You know, just, I'm sure that there's a reason for that, but just.
Well, it's the microphone, and it's probably also an antenna, right?
And they wanted that for the boom. The mic is a really good noise canceling pick, and they wanted the boom.
I think, frankly, the idea of two mics like that might actually really sound great.
You can choose. You can force it to use one mic or the other. Otherwise, it'll dynamically adjust depending on where it's getting the best quality.
Oh, interesting.
From. Yeah.
Oh, that's really interesting. So if you talk out of the left side of your mouth, it'll use the left one.
Oh, well,
if you talk out of the right side of your mouth, it'll use the right one.
Yeah. So if you're lying or remembering, it'll know which side to use.
That's interesting. That's very interesting. Tim Cook has spoken. The forum, I guess it's an internal employee forum.
Apple Web.
I guess he was doing a Q&A. And they asked him about last week's tech summit. Here's the question and answer. TechCrunch had this. They had a leak, I guess. Last week, you joined other tech leaders to meet President-elect Donald Trump. How important is it for Apple to engage with governments? That's a nice way to put it. He says, it's very important. Government can affect our ability to do what we do. This is Tim Cook writing. They can affect it in positive ways. They can affect it in not so positive ways. What we do is focus on the policies. Some of our key areas of focus are on privacy and security, education. They're on advocating for human rights for everyone and expanding the definition of human rights. They're on the environment and really combating climate change, something we do by running our business on 100% renewable energy. Remember this kind of the somber expression Tim had in this meeting. And, of course, creating jobs is a key part of what we do by giving people opportunity, not only with people that work directly for Apple, but the large number of people that are in our ecosystem. We're really proud that we've created 2 million jobs just in this country. A great percentage of those are app developers. Oh, so they don't actually work for you, Tim. This gives everyone the power to sell their work to the world, which is an unbelievable invention in and of itself. I think that that's hard to say how many jobs were created by the app ecosystem. I mean, I'm sure jobs were created by the app ecosystem, but are those newly employed people? Probably not. We have other things that are more business-centric, like tax reform. Read that a little more carefully, and you'll know that he's asking for repatriation of all those billions Apple has in Ireland.
At lower than 30% tax rate.
Yeah, not at the full tax
rate. I think the rumor target is 10%.
Trump floated 10% during the campaign. And something we've long advocated for, a simple system. Tax system? And we like it. I don't know what that means.
I think a simple tax system, yeah.
Well, yeah, when the tax system is so complicated that Apple is saying, we just can't hire people to do our taxes correctly.
We can't figure this out, yeah.
Well, I think their version of a simple system is one that doesn't tax them in place of purchase or place of sale and in place of headquarters.
Yeah.
Or place of
business. I know. It's a simple system for corporations. It's much simpler for corporations than it is for individuals. Mm. And we'd like intellectual property reform to try to stop the people suing when they don't do anything as a company. Oh, I agree with that. Patent trolls. Apple had a big settlement, right? $73 million, something.
Many times a year they're sued.
Well, and it sounds like they're going to the Supreme Court looks like it's going to review the idea of where these suits can happen, so that East Texas gets kind of
right. No more venue shopping.
The rocket docket.
Yeah. There's a large number of those issues. Tim goes on, and the way that you advance them is to engage. And this is what I was actually saying last week. This was after Mac Break Weekly. This happened on Wednesday. But I was we were talking about it on This Week in Google, and I said, these guys go because they have to go. It would be irresponsible not to go. Personally, I've never found being on the sideline, Tim says, a successful place to be. The way that you influence these issues is to be in the arena. You don't have to smile. He should write that in. You don't have to smile or be happy, but you got to go. You got to participate. So whether it's in this country or in the European Union or in China or South America, we engage. And we engage when we agree, and we engage when we disagree. I think it's very important to do that because you don't change things by just yelling. You change things by showing everyone why your way is the best. In many ways, it's a debate of ideas. We very much stand up for what we believe in. We think that's a key part of what Apple is about, and we'll continue to do so. A very diplomatic answer from Tim Cook.
Yeah. Dr. Doom of Latveria is a great leader, and we're going to look forward to talking to him about all the issues.
Yeah. But, you know, Tim, of all of the CEOs that were there, was clearly the least happy, at least the pictures I saw. And I was told on Twit we had Stephen Kovac was on. He's with Business Insider, and he actually was waiting in the lobby at the Trump Tower to catch some of these CEOs after the fact. And he said a lot of them snuck in. You know, they went in the back way, so you didn't see them coming in. And then Tim
Cook, I think bolted for the elevator.
Literally ran rather than be waylaid and say something. Wow. But that's I think that they don't want to make a photo op. That, you know, Kanye was very happy to put his arm around President-elect Trump and smile for the cameras. That was a photo op, and I think that the CEOs were not anxious to do that.
Well, they also
tweets. I'm
sorry. And when you look at the where people were seated in relation to the president elect, the faces that people would recognize and certainly the CEOs that have been written about the most were certainly placed as close to the president elect as possible to make sure that they're in the photo. You don't necessarily want to have like the president of Oracle that nobody has really written about or the general public has not really seen in a long time. The value is he's sitting down with that person that you see releasing the new iPhone. Don't you like the new iPhone? That sort of thing. And Tim Cook was right next to Peter Thiel, who was right next to the president-elect. So
yeah, he had a good seat at the table. More importantly, he was very near the kids.
I think that regardless of what people think about.
And somebody in the chat room said, the reason Tim was running is he had a taco bowl earlier from the Trump grill. And that's not nice. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Alex.
No, I was going to say that I think that what Trump has also kind of shown is that he's pretty malleable. So actually meeting with him might actually.
No, I think so. It often seems like his opinions are shaped by the last people he talked to. So get in there and talk to him. That was my point exactly.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because it's not just because of the tax thing. It's also we're looking at big shifts in policy. We're already looking at a huge threat to net neutrality. And given the, and you really want a chance to say, here is, I don't know who has told you what, but here is why we think net neutrality is an incredibly important thing. And that if people from the cable industry have said that it's totally unfair and totally wrong and totally silly to have Netflix have the same bandwidth as our branded Hulu, then we should have a talk. I understood. But didn't that same article say that Tim, after the actual summit meeting, so to speak, had some private time to have a little bit of a chat?
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, interesting.
I think was the I don't know which I think it was the Business Insider article, maybe.
Ah, so well, and I would hope so. And take those moments if you can get them, right? Who knows how often you're going to get the ear of the president? And
there's no point in not talking.
There's no point, and you can see all the issues that Apple cares a lot about. One of the issues we care about is the Macintosh, and Tim was also at great pains in the same question-answer session on Apple Web to say that Apple is not abandoning the desktop. Don't worry. Let me see if I can read. What are you laughing at?
No, it's just that sometimes it's like we have great things in mind for the Mac desktop, just like we had great things in mind for the new MacBook. Just wait.
Yeah. He says some folks in the media.
Yeah, my bad.
Have raised questions about whether we're committed to desktops. If there's any doubt about that with our teams, let me be very clear. We have great desktops in the roadmap. No one should worry about that.
Yeah, I mean, the best way to describe it right now is if you have several kids and you love all those kids, but one of them just has a monster singing hit and looks like they're about to have more and more monster singing hits, and you've got to take them to the studio and you've got to fly with them and you've got to follow them on tour. And it doesn't mean you don't love the kid who's in college and doing really well, and it doesn't mean that new baby isn't requiring a lot of attention, but that kid has just got hit single after hit single and is taking up a lot of your time right now.
Yeah.
Well, can I at the flip side of that is that when you're the kid who, I'm sorry, we only have 4 tickets to Hamilton and we're not taking you. And, well, welcome to Thanksgiving. Actually, we need you to sit in the living room because we didn't want to bring in another chair. When you're the absolutely always the last person to be invited and you're not invited to lots of things and you're being told, don't worry, we have great things planned for you next year.
Yeah.
You're kind of waiting for a put up or shut up moment. The thing that Apple is going to have to deliver in 2017 had better be pretty damn good, because they're people. It's not incorrect for people to wonder what kind of investment Apple does have in the Mac platform. If the Mac does have a future beyond in the roadmap beyond 5 years, because they've been slighted in for a long, long time. And again, so there's faith will manage for a certain amount of time, at which point you really have to show me through an actual announcement, even if you can't have hardware, show me here is what we've built. We're not going to ship in until 6 months, but we're going to have this for you next year.
That ecosystem is really important. I think that one of the things is it may seem like we only need, Apple only needs iPhones or only needs iPads or so on and so forth, but you lose your power users to Windows, or you start seeing erosion there, and that can lead to a lot of other decisions being made, at a very high level, of people who are, influencers, if people start to really jump. And I know there's a lot of people, including us, that are looking at, the Surface Studio, the Surface, tablets, and, really thinking that this is our, this may be our future if Apple doesn't sort out touchscreen power, that type of thing.
Credit, by the way, to Matthew Panzerino at TechCrunch for getting this internal conversation, and I presume it's accurate. Here's the question Tim was answering. We had a big MacBook Pro launch in October and a powerful upgrade to the MacBook back in the spring. Are Mac desktops strategic for us? And Tim answers, the desktop is very strategic for us. I don't know what that means. It's unique compared to the notebook because you can pack a lot more performance in a desktop. That's kind of an acknowledgement that the MacBook Pros really weren't really great on the performance scale. The largest screens, the most memory and storage, a greater variety of I/O, fastest performance. So there are many different reasons why desktops are really important, in some cases critical to people. This really is directed at the MacBook Pro complainers. And by the way, the comment section on TechCrunch after this is universally pans everything Tim says. Like, it's like, come on, Tim. The current generation, this is actually interesting. The current generation iMac is the best desktop we've ever made. Okay, so no mention of the Mac Pro.
And no Mac, the Mac Mini either.
The Mini either. And its beautiful Retina 5K display is the best desktop display in the world. I agree with that. It's a very nice display. Although, aren't they selling now these LG 5K? Are those LG's 4K, not 5K?
No, there's 5K. They went on sale today. Yeah, they're not quite the same as Apple because they're matte and it kind of looks different when you put it next to a...
A lot of people want matte.
I ordered one this morning.
That's tempting. Some folks...
I'm looking at an LG logo.
Oh, and I read this, some folks in the media thing. So, and then this
it's
is... go ahead.
It's a huge challenge. I mean, when you... And it's not our... Like, consumers shouldn't have to worry about this at all. Consumers should just get the stuff that they expect, especially because Apple made all these things appliances. If they still had cheese graters and easily accessible Mac Minis and we could upgrade graphics cards and CPUs and hard drives to hard's content, then, you know, we could still maintain our own computing environment. But the minute they sealed them all up, they took absolute responsibility for upgrading and maintaining those product lines. And they failed to do that for 2, 3, 4 years going on now. And that's absolutely their fault and their problem. On Apple's side, though, they are successful in too many areas right now for the way their company is built. And Microsoft never succeeded at mobile, so they can put all their feathers behind Surface. It's fine for them. And Google is super successful at mobile, and they're just building out their post-mobile, and they don't really have a desktop strategy to speak of. They have a notebook, Surface Chromebook strategy, but no one else has spread sort of as thin as Apple is. And Apple is a company that is not designed to be thick. They are incredibly focused. They don't just add product units. Like, there's no Mac unit and iPhone unit and iPod unit. And you only have the same amount of people now giving attention to 5 or 6 different product categories. And we're seeing that may not work. They might have to make hard choices. They might have to make, like, about how which products they do, about how they organize or run their company. But year after year after year, we're seeing that the iPhone absolutely gets updated because the iPhone has to get updated. But everything else sort of seems to have to fit in around that.
Yeah, and plus, it's the burden of having to be the sole manufacturer of everything that's out there. If certain product lines they really can't provide the advantage of saying whatever kind of computer you want, it's out there, you can get it. Don't worry, it'll suit you. They really have to not only decide what they're capable of manufacturing, but also what they're capable of selling. So this is, and frankly, it's time to ask the question if being a hardware-first, hardware-primary company is going to keep on working for the foreseeable future, or if there is going to have to be sort of an just like on the carton of eggs, best if used by X date for the strategy of we're making money on selling hardware, which is certainly lends credence to the idea that Apple really, 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 really wants to get into services, stuff where all they have to do is sell electrons and they don't have to maintain supply lines. And you can always manufacture, well, you can't manufacture more electrons. You can convert matter into electrons, but and with disastrous results sometimes, but it's a lot easier than manufacturing, making sure you're manufacturing every iPhone and every Mac for everybody who ever wants that sort of stuff anywhere in the world.
Well, and I do think that they, you know, keeping control of the iPhone, keeping control of the iPad probably makes sense to Apple. I still think that the old, if we look way back to the Motorola and the power computing days, you know, making the OS, the Mac OS, available to other manufacturers to customize. I think it's such a small part of their income now. It's something that they might be able to experiment with. Obviously, it's very unlikely, probably 10% or less. but I think that it is a I think that kind of experimentation to allow people, you know, to stop worrying about it, stop putting the engineering resources into those things. You continue to make them if they want. But I think that allowing people to experiment with it now that it's not the golden calf, so to speak, or whatever, you know, it's not the golden egg, you know, it's not what the company survives on. The company's has plenty of, I mean, when they had the power computing issue and the Motorola, knockoffs that were happening, primarily what happened there was that the power PC groups, the G3, G4, you know, they actually went in two different paths. So the G3 built a larger L2 cache, which suddenly made the computers fast, computers that were supposed to be cheap, much faster than the ones that were supposed to be fast. That was going to be, you know, devastating. you know, to Apple. So it's a so I think that but that, you know, Apple doesn't have to worry about that's paying all the bills now. And I think that they do have to worry about people not using, you know, I think that Mac OS right now is still probably one of the best desktop, you know, platforms to work on. And it'd just be great if we had hardware that could match it.
Well, maybe we will. I mean, this is the implication from what Tim's saying is we're gonna have new desktops.
But if we see the direction that the laptop went, I think that for a lot of pros, it's concerning. You know, like that it's going to be simplified.
Pros can use the 5K iMac even though it's an all-in-one, right?
Yeah, but it's like fine. You said before, the cheese grater was such a great thing because really you could expand it for years and years and years and years. Yeah. And if Apple doesn't want to make a new one year after year, I think it's better for them to make a cheese grater than it is to make a cylinder, because a cheese grater will serve people year after year after year.
Yeah. And you know, we're using more and more PCs in Linux boxes for what we do, because we got to put 3 or 4 graphics cards into them, or we have to do, you know, like there's all this customization that we could do to really build these very high performance machines, but we can't do it with a Mac OS because we have to, you know, we have a little trash can that we have to work with.
That Apple's doing this because it's really a profit center for them. And upgradable machines are much more of a commodity. But a 5K iMac,
I think it's more a commitment. I don't think Apple's worried about that.
They're
as
not
much
thinking
as
about that.
No, I don't think so. I think that they're looking for this design process that, you know, looks a certain way, that can be something that you're showing off on your table. It's not something that you hide away somewhere. So I think that the design principles is, I think the form is getting a little ahead of the function.
Yeah.
I think that's the issue more than anything else.
I agree with you. Yeah. I think that's exactly right. Yeah.
You know, I think, for instance, with the
cheese grater is not beautiful. Well, I think it's beautiful, but
I thought it was great.
Cylinder was a Reventon, and we needed an Aventador. Like, yeah. The concept car is fine, but you need the production car.
The tube is clearly form over function. And I mean, that's a flop. Let's face it. It was a flop.
And there's those of us who want to have 5, 6. We have 3 of them. You know, we have, I mean, for us being able to put, you know, 3, 5, 8 cards into a single chassis is something that we would want to do.
It's not over for Apple, by the way, because as Hell's Kitchen is pointing out, this, as really slick as the Surface Studio is, and as a great of proof of concept that a touch OS is a great thing. I mean, I really love this. It's not a powerful machine. It's essentially a laptop with a very, very good screen.
5200 RPM drive.
Well,
really.
Remember that power is a very, very fluid word. We're not just talking about CPU strength. We're talking about what you can do with it. Hmm. And that's where different form factors really come into play. There are a lot of people for whom the Mac Mini is the greatest computer that Apple makes, because they can buy 3 or 4 of them for the cost of a 5K iMac. And that means that they can have 4 people working on a problem at the same time, as opposed to one person working on a spreadsheet. But that the numbers on that the graphs on the spreadsheet look really great in 5K. If there's any real danger, I think, to consumers right now, or excuse me, things that people should be thinking about right now, it's not that Apple will drop the Mac. I don't think that that's going to happen in the immediate future, or maybe even in the foreseeable future. It's Apple deciding that a $600, $700, $800 gray box with rounded rectangles, with rounded corners that you connect to your own screen and your own keyboard is not something that makes sense to the company, that they will say, well, we're all going to be iMacs and Mac Pros from now on. We're going to do an education version of the Mac Mini, but that's only going to be to fulfill regular contracts, because we're starting to get our lunch eaten in the educational market. So it's not the only risk that Apple could ever stop making the Mac, because again, I don't think that's going to happen. The problem is that if they stop making Macs that you need for your uses, whether you're a power user or an intro user or somewhere in between, that's what gets you looking at the other sections of the Edmund Scientific catalog, so to speak.
Moving on, this is again from the Apple Web Post. By the way, before we do, what are our predictions for the Mac announcements? Will they be this spring? Will it only
The iMac spring. Will be this spring, we'll see what the Mac Mini and the Mac Pro. I mean, I've heard
you don't think they'll announce new Mac Minis and Mac Pros this spring?
I don't know. I have heard that there's a lot of attention on the Mac right now, and you know, especially design attention on the Mac right now. And that's not unusual. Apple does float all these things, and then it makes strategic decisions about when and how. And a lot of it is bound by Intel or AMD or other people's roadmap, so it's not entirely in their hands. But I believe all those things are being worked on, and the iMac is their best desktop, best-selling desktop.
Yeah.
We buy primarily, like the vast majority of us buy MacBooks. So some of this is weighed by what we buy. If we bought Mac Pros by the hundreds of millions, that'd be their first product every year. We just don't. So they sort of weight things according to the demand, which is not a fair way to do it, especially for creative people, but it's the way Apple's currently balancing. So iMac for sure this spring, and then I think Mac Mini and Mac Pro will be decided.
Did you hate having to buy this LG display?
I think it's bad for Apple. Like I think
it's not very Apple-y. I mean, this is on the interface, Apple site. The price is not Apple-y either. It's under $1,000.
It's a half price. Apple's doing half price on all deeply discounted prices on all USB-C and Thunderbolt 3
peripherals.
It's got
four USB-C ports in the back there. One charging and then three data, I guess.
By the way, Apple extended that discount to March 31st. So you have an extra 3 months to do it. So if you want to buy in the next three months.
So $974 is half off?
It's I forget what the exact number is for the display, but everything is up to 50% off right now on Apple.com.
I'm very tempted, but I don't have an Apple desktop to attach it to.
Well, no, I mean, and the bigger problem is that the interface is the application for most people. You can change all the pipes you want behind the scenes. Nobody really notices. And for me, the screen is how I relate to my computer. And right now I'm looking at an iMac and it has an Apple logo on it. And in my other room, I have a Thunderbolt display and it has an Apple logo on it. And that every time I use it, I'm reminded that I use an Apple system. And if Apple sees that, then people are looking at LG. What else does LG make?
This is a generic PC as far as they can tell. By the way,
it's a dangerous
in our chat room,
thing.
Nobody says that it's a $12.99 list. So this is reduced from $12.99 to $9.74. Still a very hefty discount.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it would behoove Apple, even if it's not a huge profit maker, to actually own that entire experience and keep making the displays.
I agree.
And the routers and, you know, the things that people care
about. And if you're making a new Mac, make a cheese grater, would you please?
Yeah. Or with next generation cheese grater, all the flexibility with all the modern.
I don't care make it look different. Make it look like maybe it lie flat and the cards stick up. I don't care.
Yep. But
just give it I want all the drive bays. I want all the slots.
Multiple graphics card slots that you can put in new cards for.
Well, look at Alex. He's putting three graphics cards in some of his machines.
Yep.
A lot of horsepower.
Yeah.
It's all for VR.
And there's no reason not to, and this is where Apple is a little bit in trouble, because really they're using basically stock PC components. So it's that's the problem. Is their secret sauce is the operating system, but basically they're using
I mean, when you look at the stuff that they're using, so like the CPUs, they spend a lot of time, months and months and months, with Intel making it do the things that they want, including go to sleep and power nap. The storage controller is their own.
But they're doing that in Mac OS. They're not changed. They're not buying a different CPU than I would buy at Dell.
They're at Intel working with them on the CPU, and their storage controller is custom, and a lot like they're fusing a lot of things on the motherboard in ways that they want to do it, and they're designing a lot of their own stuff. So no other company, unless they put in that effort, could go and assemble computers that way. They can make them chunkier or use more powerful parts, but they don't typically have they don't make their own timing controller so they can put out a 5K display faster. That sort of
thing. Okay, so they're tuning them up.
Yeah, they're doing everything they can to make them more than just a sum of their
parts.
But
the value add is much more apparent in an iMac than it is in a cheese grater.
Yes, the cheese grater would be more, except, you know, like they never use standard graphics cards. You had to wait for the Mac version.
Which was annoying.
It's a super bummer,
Please. Just use and at least make the connectors standard. I can change the firmware, make the connectors standard.
And you talk to them, and it is such a low priority for any video company to make Apple graphics cards, because they don't sell anywhere nearly what the PC graphics cards.
By the way,
just getting time on the fab is hard.
I am going to start a petition. Make Apple great again. Bring back the cheese grater.
G-R-A-T-E.
Let's start a petition.
Oh, I like
change.org.
Don't you like that?
Leo,
I love that.
We're all friends here. We all love you. You can tell us honestly, is this just to launch a really successful cat line?
I'm going to have red hats. Make Apple great again. Hashtag really, mega.
Oversized baseball caps.
Yeah. All I'm asking Twitter is for a custom emoji, and then I'll be happy. So I'm very curious. So when is your, it says 2 to 4 weeks on the Apple site. When is your LG display come, Renee?
I chose pick up in store because I'm not sure where I'm going to be because of the holidays, but I'll pick it up on December 29th.
Happy birthday, Karsten.
It's what I'm going to use for MacBreak Weekly going forward.
Oh, man. Yeah. So tempting.
Yeah, it really does point out to, again, power is making sure that you've got the tools that help you to work more effectively. Yeah. For Renee, like having a 4K or 5K display is really the honey in your tea. For me, believe it or not, it's having this really good $200 ergonomic arm on my $300 Dell monitor that lets me put it absolutely wherever I want it to go. That it's a silly simple thing, but I've become so much more productive. This desk has become now my favorite place to write, as opposed to before the days before ARM, where it was, it's on my laptop, I'll just go on the sofa, or I'll just stay in bed, or I'll just go into the kitchen. And now this is the fact that I've got to go someplace and put on shoes and pants has had this knock-on effect. So that's why diversity of hardware is really a big issue.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Like writer Renee is super happy with a 9.7-inch iPad Pro and the keyboard, where editorial Renee has all these metrics filling up the screen real time all day. And then Micah Sargent, one of our staff, is like, he just wants it because it'll have 4K video in the middle and room for all the toolbars on the outside of it. So he can edit, you know, without having to worry.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a pain. I mean, we have a lot of 4K monitors. I think most of ours are now Asus, I think. Asus or Acer. I have to look back. I think it's Asus, though.
I think it's the Asus is the PQ.
They're now getting to be PQ like $350 or something like that. And so, you know, we buy them like chiclets, you know, and you just, you know, it's like there's just lots of them and build arrays with them, you know, like six, you know, like three across and three down and that kind of things, where we have lots of information if we're doing a whole bunch of streams. I have a hard time being sold on spending a lot more than that on anything, you know, because, you know, if you know what you're doing, you can get most of these monitors to be very close to color accurate. And I definitely get that there are people who are doing something super, you know, like if you're a designer if you're a print designer for The Gap or something like that, they'll be talking about, you know, incredible small changes in the yellows or the reds or whatever. So I understand that to some degree, but I think for 99.999%, I have a hard time. I mean, the 4K monitors now are so cheap and they're so good. I mean, I will say I don't like going. I mean, you get used to 4K and you really want everything to be that sharp.
Yeah, I love the fact that this is where, like, when Apple or anybody releases a new computer or new laptop, and you say, oh God, you can attach six displays to it. Why would you want to have six displays? And then now you're a year later, you're like, I actually have this extra screen that I'm not using. Yeah. Wouldn't it be nice to have one so that over here, so that if I were actually wanted to face like the TV while I'm going, I'm not really a 5K guy. I really am like a multiple screen guy. And there are times where I will want to have the big work display, but then there's a second display here that's got a YouTube video that I'm watching as I'm trying to learn how to solder together this thing that I'm trying to put together, and another one over here for social media and metrics and stuff like that. I'd actually be interested in the demographics and the sort of like professions that are multiple screen people versus one big.
Well,
Obama.
This is the one I have. You got to get this, Andy. This is the Dell 43-inch. Where is that, John, by the way? Does Father Robert co-opted, I think. Does he still have it? Yeah. So these are four 1080p screens. It has inputs, so you could have four different inputs into there.
Mm-hmm.
I want that in my office.
The day trader version. I saw that at CES there was a company that had it might have been Samsung who was trying to at least demonstrate the curved display where it was designed to be again like three or four screens, one, two, three, four. But the problem when you have a huge screen like the one you showed is that if I'm looking this way, now this version of the screen is at an angle. Whereas if you have a screen, I would love to have a 90 degree just curved glass display where no matter where I go. And then when I'm doing racing games, I'll just like scooch up my chair and there I am. checking for passing. I no kidding. That would probably be the $5,000 display that I would actually consider buying.
This was under 1,000, I think, or it was around 1,000.
It looks like it's like $1,300.
Yeah, wasn't that expensive? Right.
Oh, not that I'm looking at.
Brands. Alex is already looking it up. It's a. It's not super high res. It's not. It's the day trader monitor, exactly as you said.
Yeah. But what we do with these monitors, we're monitoring live streams typically, and I'm looking at this, and the problem
it's perfect
we have
for
right
that
now
you can get HDMI, four HDMIs into it.
Because right now what we do is we have a bunch of little Mac Minis that are all feeding these a multi-viewer. Blackmagic makes these like 16 up to 1 to 16. But the problem is that 4K signal coming out is very sensitive to long runs, whereas just pumping all the stuff we need to into the monitor would actually be cheaper and more effective. So I'm very excited.
You want to try it, you just come over here.
I'll have to pry it
out of Father Robert's fingers, which means you could go to hell.
Yes.
It's a possibility. I just want to raise that issue. He's got friends in the Vatican. Well, wait a minute. So does Alex, come to think of it. So never mind. Actually, let's take a break, and then we'll another quote from Tim Cook in that. Actually, I think the most interesting quote from Tim Cook in that Apple
this
Web
is Tim.
Post. Hi, it's Tim. Just roll tide. Wait a minute. No, he's Auburn.
Yeah.
What is War Eagle?
And he doesn't tell people what company he works for. He just says Tim Cook.
He says, Tim Cook, War Eagle. I'm going on a little trip for the holidays. I bet some of you are. And I'm bringing the best carry-on bag ever with me. It's the Away bag. Now, I'll tell you why it's the best carry-on in a second. Away makes great, high-quality, smart suitcases for just $225 and up. They use high-quality materials. They're lightweight, but they offer you a lot lower price than than those big brands because they don't sell in stores. They sell directly to you. The Away bag, available in 9 colors and 4 sizes. I've got the carry-on. They've got the bigger carry-on, the medium, and the large. And they're all less than $300, and they all come with a lifetime warranty. And I love what else they come with, and I'm going to show you right here. They all come under the, by the way, these are now I won't buy luggage that isn't a spinner, right? 4 wheels. So, instead of dragging it, you could push it with a finger along. But if you look under the handle here, I love this. 2 USB ports and a high capacity battery inside. So instead of having to find a plug socket at the airport next time, I'm just going to plug my phone and tablet right into that. It's got a TSA approved combination lock, of course. Prevents theft, but as required by the TSA, lets them in. I love the spinner. 360 degrees means you can just push it along with a finger. I know you've been to the airport and you've seen people with these spinners and said, gosh, I wish I had one of those, as you drag your bag behind you. Also inside, I love this for the geek. It's a patent-pending interior compression system. You buckle in the bulky items. It forces the air out. And that way you can get all of your clothes in a carry-on. And that's the key to great travel, is not checking luggage. There's even a removable, washable laundry bag to keep dirty clothes separate from the clean. Lifetime warranty, risk-free 100-day trial period. I will be hitting the road once again with my Away bag next week as I go to visit my mom. There's the medium. I
will say that only amateurs check their personal
exactly.
Stuff.
Exactly.
Exactly. No, thank you.
But if you have to, you can always get. Look at all the colors too. You get the large, and don't get black. I was stupid. I got black. Every bag today on the carousel is black. Get a color that is a little less green. Then you'll know it's your bag. Away has a special offer because you're listening to Mac Break Weekly. $20 off your order if you go to awaytravel.com, awaytravel.com/MacBreak, and use the promo code MacBreak at checkout. And by the way, you can return it anytime in the first 100 days for a full refund, no questions asked. So there's no risk at all. Free shipping, too, in the continental United States. Just go to awaytravel.com/MacBreak and get it right now for $20 off with the promo code MacBreak. We thank Away for Away Travel for their support of Mac Break Weekly and for giving me my bag for my trip to see my mom.
You know, the charger in the bag is so important because
isn't that great?
You land, you forget to turn off your phone. You
always
forget to put on airport and airplane mode.
Yeah.
And then when you land, because it's been on looking for connections, it's dead. And now you can't get an Uber. Not that that's ever happened to me or even happened to me last week. So,
It's just that, like, in case of emergency, you know, you just got it right there.
Well, also, there's the added benefit of being able to lord it all over all the people, the nomads.
It's so funny when you're sitting there and you got your phone plugged into your bag, they really do give you a look. They go,
please, sir, may I have some
So jealous. Tim Cook continues on. Actually, I think this is a good question from one of the employees. What do you consider to be Apple's biggest differentiator? And what can employees do to foster and advance those efforts?
We're making money and they ain't.
Yeah, that's a good one. But Tim didn't go there. He said our greatest differentiator is our culture and our people. They are the foundation by which everything else comes about. You know, by the way this is written is very colloquial, and I could tell this is not something that was written by a PR department. That Tim, I would be willing to bet money, was at the keyboard typing this, as opposed to some PR, because the grammar's a little awkward in certain places. It's clearly
it sounds like his voice.
It sounds like him.
It's not the grammar. It's the short, effective sentences.
Yeah.
There isn't a lot of color to it. It's always
this sentence. I don't mean to be diagramming his sentences, but they are the foundation by which everything else comes about. Would not be written in a press release. I could tell you right now that's a little awkward, but that's fine. I want it to be awkward because it means he wrote it. Without great people and a great environment that people can live in, we wouldn't have intellectual property. And again, you probably wouldn't write we wouldn't have intellectual property.
But
I understand what he's saying, but right. We wouldn't have the best products. We wouldn't have the inventions or features I mentioned earlier. I think it's that change the world attitude and boldness that's deeply embedded in our culture, that good isn't good enough. All of this is fuel for everything else we do. From a strategic point of view, we can also focus on things where software, hardware, and services all come together and bring out the magic that only Apple can. Okay, that's a little bit of a bring out the magic's a little.
There's also no Oxford comma there. It's very bizarre.
Ah, right. Actually, software comma, hardware comma.
You can actually diagram the sentence.
I know.
Do you know how to diagram sentences?
No, but you come on over and you can do it for me. I know.
See, let's go to the telestrator.
But it's War Eagle, so you can have the quarterback sack the comma.
War.
There's not a chair and a seat in here.
Eagle. This is why you need touch screen, Tim.
Apple, or exactly. Pencil support. Imagine no touch screen.
That's why it's not about artists. It's about teachers. It's about, you know, people working in corporate. It's about all of those things, being able to do exactly what you're doing there.
Yeah. That's our secret sauce, he says. It shows up in a lot of different places, and it's something that we look for in new employees. That is what? What are they looking for?
The ability to pull the string.
Focus on things where software, hardware, and services come together and bring out the magic that only Apple can. You can rarely see precise. This is. I really like this paragraph. You can rarely see precisely where you want to go from the beginning. Isn't that true? Right. In retrospect, this feels like Tim and his personal philosophy. In retrospect, it's always written like that, but it rarely is like that. The fantastic thing about Apple employees is they get excited about something and they want to know how it works, what it will do, what its capabilities are. I think he's talking about autonomous vehicles. I think he's talking about the car project here. If they want to know about something in an entirely different industry, right?
Also, the watch was like this.
Yep. They start pulling the string and see where it takes them. Now, I think in here we got to insert, if they're Johnny Ive, otherwise they ask me first. They're focused on... Tim, is it okay if I pull your string? Yes, go ahead. They're focused more on the journey, which enables so many great things to happen. But I think that this is an interesting and very important way for a company to be run. It's not quarterly profit focused, but let's find, this is something interesting. I think Google does this too. This is something interesting. Let's drill deep on this and see if there's something here, as opposed to, you know, give me the business plan first.
Well, and I've talked to folks who used to work at Apple that say that they've gone through the entire process of developing whole products that they would die to have in their house, and then right. Apple decides there's no business for it, and they turn it off.
Yeah, by the way, that's right. It doesn't say that we're going to bring it to market. It just says you have the chance to work on it.
Yeah.
Just in the past couple of years, pulling that string on watch and fitness led to research kit, and research kit led to care kit. Now, that, I think, is something that is... speaks to Tim Cook. I don't think that speaks to customers particularly, and maybe why the watch hasn't really become a category. This is great, but do customers really care about research kit and care kit? I don't know. Doctors do.
Yeah, that's sort of where he doesn't care about the ROI point of view.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Making the world a better place.
We've got a ton of things on our roadmap that I can't talk about, but I'm incredibly excited about that are the result of pulling that string. Okay, you could drop the metaphor now. And not being bound by the box. Oh, okay, don't drop it yet.
No, it's the string that
the string is bounding the box.
Together. So when you pull the screen, it's the string, like it unties the box.
I get it. It's a string that's tying the box together. I get it. So many people.
Oh, by the way, I was in the room where Leo would have done the big block of cheese.
Were you really? You were in the big block of cheese room.
And of course, I was telling the two people I was with. There was a big block of cheese that was available for everybody. And then I had to say, I promise it's the last one of those I'm going to do. I'm sorry.
Creator projection.
It's a sickness.
It's a big. What kind of cheese? Swiss?
American.
American. We with so many things.
I do think I'm glad you called out research kit and health kit and care kit. Yeah, I think those are if it's hard for me to sometimes see evidence of their we're here to make things that change the world statement of their commitment to that. That's totally taken care of by health kit. It's no small undertaking. Yes, there's a good business potential business model for it, but this is the sort of stuff that saves lives and improves daily life.
Right.
So that's
the point.
I think it's the most important thing that Apple's doing right now.
Yeah. Let me just, I'll erase this box with the string on it. It's a bad idea.
There's an eraser on your pen?
Oh, yeah.
Plus, I think with the Patriots blocking, I really don't think that your screenplay is going to work.
Hackman.
especially with Gronk out for the next 7 weeks. I mean,
boom!
Just keep him healthy.
Boom! You got your front line here. You go, boom!
He sacked the quarterback and he sacked his family.
With so many things that we've done, we don't do it because there's a return. And return on investment. We don't do it because we know exactly how we're going to use it. It's like that. That proves to me Tim wrote this, right? Oh, like with his own little pinkies. We do it because it's clear, it's interesting, and it might lead somewhere. I like that a lot. A lot of time it doesn't. But many times it leads us somewhere where we had no idea in the beginning. Tim definitely wrote this paragraph. It's a mess. But let me erase all that stuff. All right. Anyway,
that's why Tim doesn't want to do a touchscreen Mac. You'll just use it to make fun of his writing.
I have to say, Tim, don't you want to do that, Tim? Don't you want to do it like that? Come on, Tim.
He's doing it on his 30-inch iPad.
Yes, that's true. He probably has a 30-inch iPad, doesn't he? This is a 28-inch iPad, really, in some ways. All right, that's the extent of Tim's pronouncements. I do think that this is a nice thing for a CEO to do, and I'd love to see more of that. Speaking of repatriating money, of course, you remember the EU has told Ireland there's a $14 billion fine. Ireland, you need to collect at least $13.6 billion in back taxes. Apple is appealing. They appealed yesterday, saying, I think quite rightly, the commission retroactively changed the rules. We did everything in good faith. And
I just think this completely undermines the entire rule of law within a country. For the EU to tell Ireland that you have to now go back into the past and charge someone for something that Ireland doesn't even believe in.
Yeah.
It's one thing to say you have to change the rules in the future, but it undermines every contract, every rule that every country makes with other in the EU with corporations. And it is absurd. This is why you know, the EU is having trouble keeping people, you know, in the fold is because they do things that are nuts like this.
Apple's statement said the EU, quote, took unilateral action and retroactively changed the rules, disregarding decades of Irish tax law, U.S. tax law, as well as global consensus on tax policy that everyone has relied on. The U.S. Treasury even said that the EU is making itself a supranational tax authority that could threaten global tax reforms. You know, I don't know how long it takes to resolve stuff like this, but I bet it's a long time. And even Ireland says we didn't give Apple any favorable treatment. In fact, they're accusing the EC of selectively targeting Apple. Oh no, maybe Apple's saying that. So
that's certainly possible. Google too has to deal with a lot of stuff. Yep. There are some anti-Apple laws internationally. There are some anti-Google laws internationally. What a kettle of fish they're stuck in.
Yeah. The EU and Marguerite Vestager, who is the commissioner responsible for this, told Ars Technica the commission will defend its decision in court. So.
And I'm not arguing about its merits, about whether they should or shouldn't tax more or less. It's the fact that they're going back so
far. You can't change the rules.
That's just crazy.
Yeah.
Like, it is just no. Anyway.
Well, it creates an environment where businesses can't make decisions.
I'm kind of stunned that, you know, people could be so stupid. Sorry. Like people of authority could be just absolutely boneheaded. I mean, it is like a new level of boneheadedness in the EU, which is hard for them to, you know, surpass.
One of their commissions insisted on destroying Internet Explorer long after Chrome and Firefox had done most of the damage already. I mean, it's not always rational.
Yeah.
Yeah. I came up with that crazy
browser
ballot. Yeah. Which we didn't have here in the States, but if you saw it, if you're in the EU, as you know, when you first install Windows, you had a choice of all these different weirdo browsers in addition.
And nobody saw it because they were running Chrome.
Right. Well, and what we do see in the States all the time is the cookie banner that every European site has to put up saying, hey, we use cookies. Is that okay with you? And talk about a worthless waste of
it's frustrating
energy and
like
time.
Because it keeps coming back and it keeps coming back and it gets in the way of,
well, the coding involved, the waste of users' time, and what does it accomplish? It doesn't accomplish any cookies.
Well, I would at least posit that it reminds people that these things exist, and if that's not necessarily a good reason to have this in total, I think it's good to remind people that, by the way, you are being observed when you are on the internet. Well, maybe you should at least be aware of this.
From like January 1st to January 2nd once a year, and then
cookies
I'll be
are just persistent state. It's like the website saving the page you were on, or the product you bought, or your password.
Your login status.
Yeah, I don't...
That's one application of,
well,
of cookies.
But whatever the application you use, you still have to put this warning up. And I think it scares people unnecessarily. I don't buy it. I don't, frankly, buy that cookies are that big a problem.
Well, cookies aren't that big a problem, but tracking is a big problem. Let me refine what I was about to say. I don't think tracking is a problem. I think that not being aware that tracking exists is a problem.
I agree with that.
And that's when, I'm not saying that it's important that we have these cookie warnings up there, but I can see at least one upside to it.
How do you think a website preserves the fact that you have checked and dismissed the cookie warning?
With a cookie! And most
of
the tracking is done with JavaScript and iframe.
Like tracking doesn't use cookies anymore.
Yeah.
You want to have fun on the web? Turn off all cookies and see how exciting the internet can be. Every time you get to a page, it's like the first time you ever saw it. It's like it gives the web Alzheimer's. Who are you? Hi, nice to see you. Did you ever been here before?
Proceed to checkout. Your cart is empty.
Are you my son?
Checkout. Your cart is empty.
Yeah. You couldn't have a shopping cart without it.
Here's a much better deal on airline flights because we don't know that you're willing to pay more.
Okay, Andy. All right. Okay. Mark Gurman How Apple alienated Mac loyalists. Even Mark's turning on Apple. Inside the company, the once iconic computer is getting far less attention than it once did. I'm guessing Tim was responding to this. This came out December 20th, though. So what is that? Was that today or yesterday?
Yeah, I think Tim did his thing
before then. Okay. Mark does talk about different options that Apple considered, including a gold MacBook Pro. That would have been nice. The company tried to create a longer-lasting battery for the MacBook Pro. They wanted to use higher-capacity battery packs shaped to the inside of the laptop. The design would have boosted battery life. In the run-up to the MacBook Pro's planned debut this year, the new battery failed a key test. According to a person familiar with the situation, rather than delay the launch and risk missing crucial holiday shopping season, Apple decided to revert to an older design. You know, probably after the Note 7 debacle, Apple was probably trying to...
Well, and it's also, I mean, MacBook Pro is not the holiday shopping. Like, there's pent-up demand for that product whenever you release it. The holiday shopping is usually the cheaper end
but
MacBooks.
But read on, because it says the change required roping in engineers from other teams to finish the job, meaning work on other Macs languished. The new laptop didn't represent a game-changing leap in battery performance, and a software bug misrepresented the hours of power remaining. They fixed that in 10.2.2 by removing... the information about how many
That wasn't unique to the MacBook Pro. That utility has been in need of... People have been trying to get the utility fixed for years, and this just got it the attention it needed.
In another sign, the company's prioritized the iPhone. Mark Gurman continues, Apple reorganized its software engineering department, so there's no longer... This really makes me sad. A dedicated Mac operating system team. There's just one team, and most of them are iOS first, giving people working on the iPhone and the iPad more power. That explains where Sal went, Sal Segoyan. I'm sure he was on that Mac team. There's no Automator or Apple script on iOS, is there?
Nope.
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 Anyway, this is kind of confirms what we suspected, I think. When the company was developing the Mac, the first 12-inch MacBook, Apple tested two primary prototypes, one known internally as Stealth Fighter, was lighter. A second, slightly less ambitious design known as Stealth Bomber was heavier. As you know, we got the lighter model. But with engineers developing...
It might have been called MacBook Stealth. That was one of the names they were
MacBook
testing.
MacBook Stealth. I like it. Yeah. But with engineers developing and testing two competing concepts, they had less time to figure out how to cram all the electronics into a thin slab of aluminum. And as a result, they shipped as much as a year late, or months late anyway, in 2015. For the 2016 MacBook update, some Apple engineers wanted to add Touch ID, would have been nice, a second port, which we've all asked for. Instead, we got rose gold. anyway, this is actually a depressing article. I'm not going to read anymore because this is the new happy Mac Break Weekly.
So, I mean, Mark has excellent, excellent sources of information, but what you do with that information, like, different people will draw different conclusions from it. And Mark paints a picture that's absolutely supported by his data, but it's also different than some of the other conclusions.
There's interpretation involved, you're saying. Yes.
Yes. And again, I've heard that there's quite a lot of attention on Mac and Mac design and stuff lately. Yeah. And some of these decisions are, like, the timing is right about the holidays, but also if Apple delayed the MacBook Pro to the spring, they have to deal with everyone saying, oh, there was no MacBook Pro released in 20. Right. Like, all of these are judgment calls that when you're running a product decision, you have to make.
You have to balance. He does talk about the Mac Pro, the tube, and says it was darn difficult to make. And then for political reasons, they decided to make it in America, in Texas. And 3 years on, some Apple engineers have raised the possibility of moving it back to Asia where it would be cheaper. And frankly, the skill set would be there to make a product as complicated with as much sophisticated machining and materials work. But I have a feeling that with our new president, that would be even more difficult politically, right?
It would be a firecracker.
Yeah. I mean, that's just going to – that would give – I could see the tweets already.
Apple moves jobs out of America.
Yeah.
Should be going the other direction.
Yeah. Well, they're very good. And then something about failing Apple and stupid or dumb.
Boycott. Yeah.
Boycott.
Well, actually that's kind of a consideration. We've seen now twice that.
Well, I'm not being facetious. It's a huge consideration.
Boeing and Lockheed. Public eye. Exactly. Yeah. Someone makes one tweet and suddenly you lose about $18 billion in value. Yeah. $1 billion. And then the stock market in place also. It's very, very interesting to consider all the different strategic thinking that's going on about how to interface with this new version of the White House that's coming in January.
Gurman does say that they're considering putting the touch bar on standalone keyboards, which a number of people have asked for. He says Apple will decide whether to release these based on how well the features do on the MacBook Pro. This is the sad thing. Mac fans shouldn't hold their breath for a radical new design in 2017, though. Instead, the company is preparing modest updates, USB-C ports, a new AMD graphics processor for the iMac, and minor bumps in processing power for the 12-inch MacBook and MacBook Pro.
And once again, what do we not see in this list? The Mac Mini.
Or the Mac Pro.
Some of the stuff, like, we've known for a while that, or like, it's been widely speculated for a while that the MacBook Pro was supposed to ship at WWDC and it didn't. And they got it out when they could. But, you know, if they'd waited longer, they would have had more in it. And the iMac was probably scheduled to ship this fall. And that's the bump that it gets. You have the iMac, it's already running Skylake. If Kaby Lake is ready, you get that in there. But USB-C and Thunderbolt 3 is what you're betting your future on. So you put those. Like, Apple is a very logical company. When you look at it, especially in hindsight, you see the decisions that they make are defined by the products that are available, the technologies that are available, and what their market wants from them. And that's the iMac we were always going to get, the iMac update we're always going to get. So I'm not sure if it's depressing or not. It's the next iteration of iMac until there is a radical new design. And what that radical new design isn't really clear yet.
I'm hoping they're not as radical as the MacBook Pro.
No, it's so, not. But that's the thing, right? Like, if they just spec bump it, we're disappointed. And if they change something major, we're disappointed.
Right. I still think that if they left the left side of the MacBook Pro alone and just put USB-Cs on the right side, everyone would have been like literally 90% of the upset would have been gone.
And done a big CPU and speed upgrade. Yeah.
Just upgrade that. Everyone would have been like, that's great. And then the next one they can do something, except they could leave our Mac adapter alone. but I think that, you know, a little bit more of a progression between hard pieces of hardware. And I think one of the reasons they're jumping so much is because they're not planning to update it anytime soon. So they're going to do whatever they're going to do, and then that they're not going to touch the MacBook Pro form for another 3 or 4 years.
The spaceship launches next year. We're going to talk a little bit more about that. And, we got lots of little tidbits. And, of course, your picks of the week coming up in a bit. But first, a word from Pearl. Did you know that rear view cameras are going to soon be mandatory on all new cars? I think that's really a good thing. But if you don't have a rear view, because believe me, I can no longer drive a car. I can't park if I don't have a rear view camera. I can't. I literally can't. I'm so hooked on my rear view camera. But maybe you have an older car that doesn't have a rear view camera. I've got a great solution for you. Rear Vision from Pearl Auto. It's the easiest to install. It's the best because it has two cameras. It's a camera frame that goes around your license plate. If you can install a license plate frame, you can install this. And then you see it has that OBD2 port adapter that you plug in. You mount your phone on your dashboard event. They have the mounts for you. Put the Pearl app on your iOS device or your Android device. And now you're going to get two HD cameras, review cameras, including audio and visual alerts to help you drive. There's one that you can see directly what's behind you, and then there's a wide angle one that lets you effectively see around corners. Now, every time we live in Petaluma, a lot of people with pickup trucks and SUVs, a lot of soccer moms. Whenever I park, I can't see oncoming traffic. I can't. And I'm a little gun shy because I've been hit by cars pulling out from blind parking spaces. So this is so awesome to be able to look at your rear view and see cars coming, basically see around corners. Night vision as well as day vision. The camera frame is solar powered, so you don't have to do anything to wire it for power. It gets its power from the sun. Bluetooth, again, to your phone, and that's great. Tony installed it. Tony has an older BMW, beautiful BMW. He's tricked it out beautifully, Hachini. But he didn't have a rear view camera. 10 minutes he had it set up and loves it and uses the magnetic. There's a couple of different ways you can mount it, but he used the magnetic vent mount, has a pivot ball joint, and holds your rear view right there where it would be on a car equipped with rear view. And we've got a special deal. Of course, we always try to negotiate these deals with the advertisers here. $50 off at pearlauto.com/twit. This would be a really good gift for a teen. You know, often we give teens the hand-me-down cars, the cars without the rear-view camera. Who needs a rear-view camera more than a teen? I can tell you right now, it'll save you money in the long run. Trust me. It's very, very clever. Very good. pearlauto.com/twit. pearlauto.com/twit for $50 off. Good holiday gift.
This is a very expensive show for me. I just want to say
I know. That. It always is. I almost always buy your guys' picks.
Right. But I needed a new bag.
I needed a
backup camera.
I know. We pick our advertisers carefully.
I know.
But don't listen to the next ad, because then you'll be buying a new house.
I am buying a new house.
Oh, then listen to the next ad.
Yeah, there we go.
All right. I'm really disappointed by this, but it's not the end of the world. But a Florida court has now ruled that we always thought that a password in your mind was protected by the unlawful right, the right against unlawful search and seizure. But a court in Florida says that investigators can compel a suspect to reveal his iPhone passcode. Creep. I don't think it's germane to the issue. I mean, he's a creep. He was doing upskirt photos with his iPhone. In the past, most courts have ruled that a fingerprint can be compelled, but because you have a right not to testify against yourself, it's not unlawful search or seizure, it's a right to not self-incriminate, you should not be compelled to give up a password. That would be self-incrimination. But the Florida Court of Appeals Second District has said, nope. This is the Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination, not the Fourth Amendment. I always get that wrong. Judge Black referred to a famous Supreme Court decision, Doe versus U.S. 1988, in which Supreme Court Justice Paul Stevens wrote that a defendant could be made to surrender a key to a strongbox containing incriminating documents, because it's physical, but could not be compelled to reveal the combination of a wall safe. This was a hypothetical on the part of Justice Stevens. Judge Black kind of dissented. We question whether identifying the key which will open the strongbox, such that the key is surrendered, is in fact distinct from telling an officer the combination to the safe. In other words, he disagreed with the Supreme Court. More importantly, we question the continuing viability of any distinction. And this is the key here, as technology advances. So he's saying, in effect, hey, since 1988, technology has changed, and so we don't think that the Fifth Amendment protects you against giving up your password. EFF disagreed. I think they got it wrong, said Mark Rumold, a staff attorney. It's not the first time it's come up in courts. I think other courts have done a better job of evaluating the Fifth Amendment and the constitutional rights that are at stake.
And well, I think this one will probably go all the way to the Supreme Court.
I hope so.
Yeah. And I think that the current makeup, I think, would probably turn it down, depending on what
the issue really is. It's to prevent the state from doing, you know, essentially torturing you. Getting confessions out of you that you have the right not to self-incriminate.
I think that one thing that Apple should add is a feature called an auto kill that is basically another code that you put in that just wipes the phone out.
Wow.
You know, I think
be held in contempt. I don't know if that would necessarily.
I'm not saying you would do it now. I don't think you'd do it now. But I think that, like, for instance, if you're in a situation where, you know, and this, there's a variety of situations, you know, there's companies, for instance, that when you leave the United States, if they take your laptop away from you, you need to, the company policy is to never take it back. So if they take it out of your sight, if they touch it, you know, open it, start typing on it, they literally don't want the computer back. So you upload everything to the cloud. You typically make sure you don't have anything on it that's sensitive. You write it out with zeros, and then you basically, if everything goes fine, then you have your computer. But if TSA or a foreign group takes it away from you, you immediately you just say you don't want it back. And because they're, these are obviously technology companies that are very concerned about espionage. And so the other side of that is, if you're in a situation where you could feel like you're in a position that you're going to be in trouble, you could literally just, type in a code and it just wipes it out. There's not a lot of work to be done to reset the camera, reset it. Yeah. And it's not just for criminals. It's for people protecting themselves from the government.
I'm siding with the EFF on this, partly because it's you get the precedent by saying, well, this person has the most let's not ruin the flavor of the show by saying the sort of evidence that's on this phone, but yeah, the sort of thing where it's there, we just need to get rid of this guy.
Yeah,
we need and this is someone who needs to be gotten rid of. But then it becomes we see a lot of misapplications of warrants, where a court can get a warrant based on you're supposed to say, here's what we're looking for, here's why we need to get it, here's the person that we're trying to get it from. And we've had situations where a warrant has been issued. We will be able to tell you exactly why we needed this warrant once we see what we get from after executing this warrant. We've had warrants that have been executed on a house, so that anybody who happens to be inside the house has to turn over their phones and collect evidence that way. And that's these things stack up on each other. However, I have to admit that I am bothered by it is a different world today than it was in 1988, where there was a time where the Fifth Amendment meant that if I know that I was there in the room and I held a gun to this person's head and I pulled the trigger and I killed this person, I can't be I have the option of saying I've refused to answer
you
that question.
You can't be forced to confess.
But also you can't be forced to perjure yourself but you can't put someone in a situation where you will get a conviction based on based on that kind of trickery. This is different though, where it's like if I keep all of my stuff on my phone and on my computer, imagine the password interferes with the ability to collect evidence of any kind, because essentially it's absolutely unobtainable by any means. Remember that the difference between getting the combination to the safe and getting a key to the safe is that do I compel you to give me the key, in which I put the key in the lock and I unlock it, or do you refuse to give me the combination, by which means we get out we call the fire department, we get out that huge disc saw, and we saw it open, and we still get that evidence. That doesn't mean that I think this is a good idea. Again, I side with the EFF, but I predict that it's something that I'm going to become more bothered with as time goes by, where it's now not possible to collect evidence of any kind and investigate any crime because it's behind a password that a person has the legal right not to divulge. I just think it's the sort of thing where we've decided to be a society where we give people freedom, we give people more power than the government has over that person, and we're going to have to be okay with the idea of having fewer convictions on certain crimes. And I hope that people have the determination to say, okay, this principle is worth letting a few guilty people go free for.
Although you have to consider what they're doing in the UK to solve this. They're jumping suspects to get the phone.
One thing that was interesting to me, Leo, is for the first time when I flew back from Petaluma, I saw people turning off Touch ID before they went through customs.
Oh, interesting.
And then turning it back on afterwards. And I used to never see that, and now I've seen it a couple
people
times.
People are aware of it, yeah.
And the one thing is we have legal precedent for privilege. Like there's, of course, legal privilege and clerical privilege, but also spousal privilege, where we've decided that the relationship between two spouses is so close that we don't want to compel testimony from one or the other. And there could be an argument made for a digital privilege, where we've decided that these devices are now digitally assisted memory, that they're the closest thing we have to extra RAM for our brains, and we're just going to declare that this is privileged information. And then you can't jump somebody for the device. It's still on the device whether they have it or not. And that's going to be a huge moral and ethical decision to make, But there will be a time when these things, and eventually we'll get to implants, where these things have such real-time private right. information about us that it simply cannot be treated like a normal object or a safe or anything else that we've experienced mm-hmm. before.
Yeah, and the other aspect is this is something that a lot of people in a lot of different situations in America are confronting right now. There are things that you're okay with so long as you trust the current political climate. But then you realize that, oh, well, we've been handing – there are people who are in the field of immigration that have been handing information over saying, well, our policy is to try to find a way to give a undocumented – whether you call it illegal immigrant or undocumented worker, I know that could be a contentious thing. I don't want to get into that. If you turn over this information to us, we want to give you a way to become a legal resident or an acknowledged resident of the country. You moved here. You've raised kids here. Your kids are citizens. We don't want to break up families. We don't want to lose a hard worker or a hard contributing citizen. We will give you a path to that. And there are a lot of people that are now, I wish I had not given that information to local government, because that now could be handed to, here's a list of people that need to be rounded up toot sweet as soon as new people come into these positions. So it becomes a thornier and thornier issue, because you don't want to be that person who says, I'm going to now take my iPod out of mothballs, because now whenever I enter a public place where I think there are going to be hundreds, if not thousands, of people, I want to switch off my phone but still be able to watch videos and listen to music and read books. But on the other hand, you don't want to be looking back 8 years to the decisions that you didn't really think about 8 years ago and realize that your life would be a lot better right now if you had been a lot more careful, a lot more suspicious and paranoid.
Here we go from Wired Magazine. The Electronic Frontier Foundation has released a full-page ad related to this topic. Your threat to the technology community, your threat model just changed, asking and suggesting that the technology community scrub their logs. You cannot be made to surrender data you do not have. Use end-to-end encryption and HTTPS for every user transaction, communication, and activity by default. If you get a government request to monitor users or censor speech, tell the world and fight for user rights in courts and Capitol Hill and beyond. And this is in response to the election of Donald Trump. I think this might be a little hysterical, but...
Well, a lot of things are changing. We already have Apple and Google and other top-tier companies saying that, look, we will not help any government compile. We will not help the Trump government compile a list of Muslims that need to.
We won't make a database.
A national database.
Although the Trump campaign denies that they want a database. So this is one of those things. He did. On the other hand, I did the research a year ago during the campaign, we will create a database of Muslims. He has since retracted that. It feels like the tech community is, I mean, I don't know.
We had a lot of national security letters in previous administrations.
That's exactly right. I mean, frankly, you should have scrubbed your logs 8 years ago.
Yes. I would not trust any administration at this point.
A particularly if this person has already said, this is what I want to do. This is why I'm deeply concerned about First Amendment issues. This is why I'm deeply, deeply concerned about libel laws. That let's find out what he was serious about and what he was just seemed like a good thing to say at the time. But regardless of all that, it's significant that they're preemptively saying, no, we are. I don't care if the United States asks us to help them create this database. We are preemptively saying we will not be involved in that. And that is essentially starting the process of drawing that line in the sand, saying we do business in America. We require the use of the government for a lot of the stuff that we do. We would like the government to help us do things better. However, we are not going to. There are things that we simply will not do. And I
agree.
Especially with Google and Apple, they will not negotiate away that.
These are things, though, that to Renee's point, they should be doing, and they should have been doing all along. And it may be there's potential for it to get worse. Trump has made campaign promises that would cause some to worry about mass surveillance and so forth.
This is a good big opportunity for Apple too. I mean, there's so many dimensions to the idea of personal privacy. I have to admit that a year or two ago, I was certainly thinking of, well, of course, you don't want you want to be private against government agencies as well. But I thought that was way, way down the list. But I am one of these people who's now thinking maybe I want Google to be really, really proactive in saying that here is how little information we actually retain about our customers. And so we are assuring you that we do not have any information of value to hand over to an overzealous, and I'm talking about the national administration, I'm talking about local administrations that simply want to get things done very, very quickly and easily by simply saying, hey, we don't have the legal power to empower you to require you to do this. However, we're asking you to hand over this information because we think it would be very, very handy to apply machine learning against a huge database of information and to figure out where we need to send services and where we need to ignore services.
Let's see. New screensavers for the Apple TV. Dubai, Greenland, Los Angeles, and more.
Why haven't we seen a China, a Shanghai, or a Beijing one? I thought that was going to be at least number six on the list.
Yeah. Well, these are so beautiful.
They're so well done.
I just want to leave my Apple TV on all the time.
I would love to see a documentary about how any of these are made, because there are times where I really do wonder, like, how I think that I can see like a graduated filter on some of the sunset ones, but how are they getting these beautiful pictures?
Helicopters and drones, there's no well-known city photographers.
Well, I asked Vincent Lefore, because, you know, he did a book of aerial photography, which is beautiful, and he's done drone and helicopter shots, and he was very cagey, and I got the strong sense that Apple doesn't want anybody to know how they did it or who did it. It's all NDA'd. Yeah,
it's all NDA'd.
Yeah. So he was able to say that he had advised Apple, but he wasn't able to say much more. So, and I think Alex Lindsay knows a little bit about that kind of thing. That, you know, these companies they want to preserve the magic.
Yeah. Yes.
But I agree. I'd love to know it.
Because everything's easy. Yeah. You know, they do. Yeah. So it's not. Yeah.
Niantic decided not to do an Apple Watch app for Pokemon Go. You must be in tears, Renee Ritchie.
Totally not true. Well, I mean, so 9to5 Mac is a highly respected outlet. They do fantastic work. They're an incredible news organization. But this, I have heard the exact opposite of this from people who are in every position to know.
So the story from Jordan Kahn is that, and we knew Niantic was doing its own band, right?
They did. I mean, they made Pokemon Go Plus, which is a band that you wear. It's already available in limited quantities.
Like, is it available?
Yeah, it's been available for months.
I've seen ads for it. I just never saw anybody wearing one. And every time I tried to order one, I couldn't, until I didn't care anymore.
It's the same thing. You look at Twitter, it's like, it's available at Best Buy. Get it now. Or it's available at GameStop. Get it now.
But you're saying that is not a reason for not doing an Apple Watch app. And in fact, they're still going to do it.
The original story from 9to5, and again, they're a phenomenal news organization. They could well have better information than I do on this, was that Niantic had canceled it. And so I started asking around, and people that are, again, every position to know and may or may not actually have it running right now said that, no, it exists. It's scheduled. And my understanding is that it was just a non-trivial app to make, and that's because they didn't just make a version of Pokemon Go for the Apple Watch. It's tied into the workout system so that if you want to use it, you will get credit for the exercise while you're using it.
Yeah.
But more importantly, it's tied into HealthKit, and the HealthKit is Apple's most complex privacy system because it's got bidirectional privacy, and they're incredibly careful about what sort of information leaks out of HealthKit. And normally that's not a problem because, again, it's for maybe a blood sugar meter, and they want to make sure that your insurance company doesn't learn that you may or may not even own a blood sugar meter. But in this case, it's just because it's using that as a sink, they still have to go through all the privacy hoops and fine tune that. And they want to make sure it's a really great experience because when the original Pokemon Go launched, a bunch of servers went down. It wasn't the best first run experience. So suffice it to say that there's a lot of people on both sides working really hard. And I think there's two things that sort of show this. The one is that Niantic themselves finally tweeted saying all systems are go and it's coming soon. And then a new version of Pokemon Go came out yesterday on Android, today on iOS, that has Apple Watch code in it. And that, I think, is a really good indicator that it's okay. that it's in progress.
Only Renee cares that deeply about all of this, but we thought we'd mention it.
It's a phenomenally successful mobile property. Yeah.
Okay.
it also points to it. Also,
I goes love on, it. I'm not. I'm just teasing.
It's a good example of sometimes we think that Apple is screwing up because they're not doing this when it's so obvious. Or sometimes as Apple fans, why can't someone this other company do this thing that's so obviously working with Apple? Oftentimes there are these little tiny details that you would not know unless you're working inside this industry about here's what we have to do as soon as we put health information in here. Here's everything we have to do. As someone who, when my dad was in long-term nursing care, said I will donate my time, hardware, and services to add an entire separate Wi-Fi network so that visitors to this facility, even long after I've reason to come here, can use Facebook and then so the patients can Skype with other people, because I got to know the staff pretty well. And I was in meeting after meeting after meeting where, again, no complaints about the bureaucracy. It was, here's, we want to make this happen. Here's what we have to do to make this happen. And it wasn't just the idea of having to have a totally separate network that could not in any way be on this the network where medical information is being transacted, but it has to be established that there is not possible for there to be crossover between these two things. And so, this is something that I'd like to keep in mind for myself. Whenever I'm like, geez, why is Apple not doing this? Or, God, why can't Google do this as Apple? Sometimes there are just reasons that are absolutely obvious if you're inside this inside shell. But if you're outside the shell, you just think, oh, these people haven't a clue.
So 9to5 does say that this doesn't mean that there won't be a watch band. In fact, they refer to that tweet you referred to, Renee, and say Niantic's now on the hook to deliver. But that they were saying that Niantic was going to do this next plus Ingress band, first for Ingress, then for Pokemon Go, with collectible mods related to the various games.
Everybody wants hardware profits. Hardware profits are really, really delicious for a lot of companies, but they come with their own sort of headaches. And I think it's sort of a win-win if they get the Apple Watch app.
Jordan concludes his article saying, ultimately, Niantic could both ship the Pokemon Go Apple Watch app and its Ingress wearable. But this behind-the-scenes decision-making is what has led to questions about the Apple Watch app.
And again, this is a follow-up article. Their first article a couple of days ago said it was canceled.
Okay. So I think.
And again, they might have better information. Like it might actually be canceled, and people I know just haven't heard about it. But as far as I can tell, and as far as what Niantic is saying, and as far as it's all systems go.
Are you playing Super Mario Run?
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Sure. Who isn't? The highest grossing.
I'd much rather have a cartoon character do my running for me. That's much better than Pokemon Go, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it just does it, and you just every once in a while you hop around. Actually, it's free, but it's not really, because you only get three levels. Correct me if I'm wrong, Renee. Because I played three levels, and then it said that'll be $10 if you want to.
Yeah, continue. This is the sort of thing where you can't win. And part of that is Apple's fault. And part of that is our fault. And part of that is just that apps are a commodity now. There's no scarcity for apps anymore. There's just hundreds of millions of them. And we don't value them the way that we used to value a Nintendo cartridge or a box of Photoshop. Because if we don't want to pay it, we'll just go get the next free demo and have 10 minutes of fun with that. It doesn't really matter to us. But Nintendo didn't want to do the in-app purchase where you buy you pay money to get Mario back on the maze faster, or you get a different color hat or something.
Yeah, thank
they
you.
They wanted to do. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, actually, they are doing that, though, because you can buy decorations, right?
That's all. Well, there's a one-time in-app purchase that unlocks the game.
There's the $10 in-app purchase.
Yeah.
But then there is a store where you can buy other stuff for your.
Yeah, that's all in-game, though. I mean, that you just collect the little coins.
You don't buy it with money. You don't buy it.
No, there's no pay to win.
Okay.
Yeah, there's no pay to win. But a lot of people played the first three levels and then got that $10, upgrade, and they went to Apple Store and they said, this is the worst game in the history of games. I'll give it one star because I can't give it less.
They need to communicate more clearly. This is a demo. If you want to play the game.
It was called Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And then others are, Afan Dunn complained yesterday. He said, well, you don't get to do anything. It runs. All you can do is jump, and there's various jumping you can do, long hold or double tap and so forth. I found it pretty fun, actually. The big disappointment for me, and we talked about this last week, is you can't play unless you're online, which means I can't play it on an airplane, which is extremely frustrating.
Yeah, that's right. I got the new Field Runners, and I had the same problem where the
they're doing that too.
Well, the new one, I guess, had it. I just know that I got on the flight and I started taking off and I was like, okay, I'm ready to play. And then I was like, I can't get connected. And I was like,
well, maybe you have to download content.
I don't know.
So this is Field Runners Attack you're talking about. And I haven't played it yet. But like you got me started on Field Runners. I love Field Runners. And this is the new Field Runners, which is, how is it different? It's Field Runners is a tower defense game that we just love.
It looks like I haven't gotten to play it yet because I play games of flights.
Kind of Clash of Clans meets Field Runners is what it is.
Yeah.
Oh, too bad.
So I think that it requires my solitary. I just went back to the old Field Runners.
And by the way, talk about in-app purchases. This is one of them gem games, and the more gems you have, the more fun the game will be. Whenever I see a gem,
well, you know what's interesting is I find that the old Field Runners, or Field Runners 2, is actually a real, for me. I mean, I've spent a fair amount of money on it. I mean, not massive amounts.
How do you spend money on it?
Well, you can buy more of the little points that you need to buy the things that you want to play during the game. Which is what I like about it is that you just you can definitely play the entire thing and play all of it the way through.
I did. I didn't even know you could buy something.
Right, and so you can, but you know the gold that you get for each of those games, you can go buy 20,000 of those, you know, instead of earning them.
Right.
And so you know, and I earned a lot of them, and I was very stingy, and then I got into one level, and I started, you know, I just bought $20 worth of them, and just called it a day, and then that's lasted me like a year. so it's been, you know, it's been because you know you win some back, you get them, and it's all, but it just being part of that currency to kind of pick it up. You know, they definitely got some money out of me to do that, but without it being this thing that stopped me from playing, which I think the model was actually pretty good. And I haven't looked at the new one enough to know.
So I am not of the proper generation to judge Super Mario Run, not having played Mario in my youth.
It was my first. I didn't get the Pong and the Atari and the ColecoVision. But I had the Super. I had the Nintendo Entertainment System, the Super Nintendo, the Game Boy, all those things. I grew up with almost every Mario game, and this just to me is a Mario game. Like Nintendo is so good at melding the controls of the device to the experience of the game, and sort of this feels like it's not the Mario game that you're used to with the buttons and the jumping and the running.
All you can do is jump.
Yeah, but I mean, they really nailed that experience. And it makes me, I just wish so much that they would make MFI Nintendo controllers, because that's the experience holding that gamepad. And then their apps on the Apple TV. And that's hundreds of millions of people that they, or on an iPad, that's hundreds of millions of people who could still buy Nintendo hardware, those controllers, and just play those. Don't even make the new stuff. Keep the new stuff on the Switch, but put out like everything from Donkey Kong to Super Mario Brothers and Super Mario World, and just have at it.
I am so waiting for the Nintendo Classic Edition to after I hope they make more of them, because that's the first games console I've been super, super excited to actually own. And it's not just nostalgia. Some of it is that just like I'm willing to pay to see any movie that Harrison Ford is in, because I just like him and the characters he plays. And sometimes, get to see the new Mario, see what Mario's up to right now. So, yeah, because I was the sort of person who had to stop, had to take the batteries out of his Game Boy, because I could hear this music when I put when I closed my eyes.
So
and that's the way maybe a fan.
It's a different game, but it's very similar. I mean, you still have to save Princess Buttercup or whatever her name is, and
Princess Peach. Yeah, Peach. I mean, there was a little bit of pushback on that, because a lot of people say we're of the generation now where Mario and Peach should both be an option from the get go.
Okay, whatever. And then I love the, you know, it's got the sounds. Somebody, though, I have to say, somebody in the chat room yesterday when I was talking about it said, Leo, you clearly know nothing about Nintendo. So
the sound was great. I mean, the music was great.
I thought it was great. He says, Mario, and the whole thing's there. It's got this.
It's the level of craft. I think Nintendo has game designers that are as good at what they do as Apple's designers are at what they do. They're just so well done. And the music that's in these games, the Mario theme, it's if you go into YouTube and just look for Mario covers, And it's not just, oh, isn't that amusing? They're playing this in the symphony orchestra. These melodies and the way that it progresses, it works when you have just a guy playing it on acoustic guitar, when you have a jazz combo playing it. And this is something they composed for the background while you're just collecting coins and trying to get points. As I said, it's games that are designed by Nintendo are just gorgeous art objects. I love them. It's the one big argument I had when Roger Ebert was talking about I don't believe that the games can be art, and that's when those are the arts we had via email. Okay, let me show you.
I also think people should know, and this is from Apple Insider, the reason the game connects to the internet, it's pretty clear in an interview Mashable had with Shigeru Miyamoto, is it's anti-piracy. He said security for three paragraphs, and then the guy at Mashable, who gets all the credit in the world, said, by security, do you mean anti-piracy? And Miyamoto says, yes. but that it also is more than that, because it's using a significant, not non-trivial amount of data, somewhere between 40 to 75 megabytes per hour of play. And
the recent Pokemon Go update did similar, and what they've done is moved a lot of sprites off the local install to make that smaller and faster, and then a lot of the renders get done on the server and pushed down to you.
Yeah, so you want to play this on Wi-Fi, unless you have unlimited data, and you won't be playing it on the airplane. But I think,
once you're in the air and you're paying the exorbitant go-go tax, then you're fine.
It's
also a safety thing, because a game like that, when you're telling people to please turn off your devices because we've closed the cabin doors, that adds at least 15 to 18 minutes. Please, I just got to clear this one level. No. Yeah.
And that's the pilot who's doing the pilot sitting in the back row. The deadhead. Yeah,
we've got an indicator. We're going to have to just have a maintenance come here. Damn it.
It's amazing. My 11-year-old godson, we pass Mario Street when we drive to his house, and every time we pass it, he goes, da-da-da-da-da-da. And like, he's 11, but it's still part of his culture.
I love it. That's cute. That's really cute. Apple has activated next-day deliveries for last-minute Christmas shoppers. They have done this in the past. They announced that you can go to the online store as late as December 23rd and get a Mac, put a Mac under the tree. If you wish, orders
right now. If you're quick,
go ahead.
I was going to say right now, if you're quick, the Series 1 and Series 2 watches just hit the refurb store. So if you want a really good price from Apple on the watches,
nice. Get the Series 2. I think it's worth it. Faster, better battery life. You can go as late as 2 p.m. on December 23rd for next day delivery. So they do use same day courier deliveries in select metropolitan areas. They do use Postmates. So if you have Postmates in your area and an Apple store, you can even get it same day. Anything else we want to talk about before we go to our picks? I think not. Gentlemen, prepare your picks. And while you're doing that, Alex Lindsay, listen carefully, because it's time to buy a new house or refi your old house.
I can't wait to see what the offer code is for this 20% off a house.
20% off a house. Awesome.
No offer code for this. It's from Rocket Mortgage. Quicken Loans, as everyone knows, one of the best mortgage lenders, probably the best mortgage lender in the U.S. And they have noticed something over the many years they've been doing this. There's a certain group of people, not all by any means, but the kind of people who might, for instance, be watching or listening to a show called Mac Break Weekly, who don't want to do their mortgage application the way everybody else used to do. And they want to do it all online. They don't want to go to meet a mortgage lender. They don't want to bring boxes of paper, pay stubs, check statements. They want to do it all online with a push of a button or a click of a mouse or a tap of a finger. Well, Rocket Mortgage is the answer. They created Rocket Mortgage just for people like us. It brings the mortgage approval process into the 21st century. It's completely online, fast, powerful. They've taken all the complicated parts of applying for a mortgage out of the equation. You can do it all online from your couch if you want, on your iPhone or your tablet. It's because it's all computerized, too, you're going to get your loan approval fast, and it's going to be a loan that's tailored to your particular financial situation. They give you a lot of choice in that, too. So if you're looking to refinance your mortgage or buy a new home, check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/MacBreak. That's quickenloans.com /MacBreak, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, and MLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. Maybe you're not buying or refining right now, so make a note of it. Put it on a post-it note on the fridge. You never know.
I'm going to try it.
You should try it. Who used it? Brad Sams used it from Windows Central and now Therat.com. And he said it was awesome. And the best part, you know, there is one part where they can't be completely online, and that's signing the papers. Obviously, the banks still want you to actually physically sign papers when you buy a house. But what they do that is, I think, awesome is they send a notary with all the paperwork to your house. So you still don't have to get up from the couch. You might want to put on pants. That's all I'm saying. But you don't still, because the notary comes in and walks you through the whole thing, notarizes it, and you're done. I think you should try it. Let us know what you think.
We're in the process right
now. Are you?
Now,
so I hope you're buying out here or you're going back to Pittsburgh?
San Rafael.
All right.
Yeah, so.
All right.
So, you know, a lot of bargains down here.
They tell me you cannot buy, this is a disclaimer, a lot of bargains. I know, he's joking. Such a deal.
It's so sad.
Such a deal.
So it's like, for $180,000, you can buy a shovel and a tarp to cover the hole that you're sleeping in after you dig the hole with the shovel.
We were looking at one, and it was like I was like, this one just, you know, it looks so rough. And Carlita was like, that's the best you can get for $1.1 million.
Fixer,
you know,
like, upper. People ask how I got to Petaluma. We wanted to buy a house. Yeah. We were living in San Francisco. Abby was 1 year old, and we wanted to not have her raise her in the city, but raise her in the country. And so we just started driving north until we could afford a house. And we went right straight through Marin, believe me. Kept on going.
Yeah.
Yeah, kept on, and that was 25 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Quite a stretch, but we got our first house in Petaluma. If I could buy a house anywhere in California for that price, I would buy five. Because it's like, but on the other hand, as housing prices went up, we've made some money, so that's good.
I don't think our real estate agent was ready for the fact that I said, well, I'd like to come in and, you know, we're going to prepare for what we're going to do to the house. So we'll do a 3D scan of the whole house.
Oh, nice.
So we're, yeah. So
oh,
we're,
man. Which
was it, like a probe droid?
What app did you use for that?
We're using a Matterport.
Yeah.
So it runs on an iPad you set it down and you go off in the other room with your iPad and you hit go and it just slowly turns, you know, and it it'll actually build the whole tour of the house and then
oh my God.
And then it also builds an OBJ.
I'm
sorry. That sounds impressive, but if there is not like a laser line that goes up and down and around,
you know, there's no
you got to make using, that.
It has sensors on it, but it's not there.
No, you can't. It's not visible. You got to make that. Get a little Raspberry Pi, put it next to
Alex
it.
Alex adds those in post. You just add those
exactly.
To you.
Exactly.
Alex Lindsay, what's your pick of the week?
So I'm actually wearing my pick. You probably can't see it, which is part of the point. So if you look really closely in my ear, you'll see these little...
What? What are they?
So if Peppers. I pull them out here...
I noticed you weren't wearing headphones.
I just realized, but I'll pull them out for a second.
Isn't Alex a funny-looking person? He's just so... What the what?
So that is a... we spend a lot of time in locations that have a lot of guys with security. And
this is how they do it.
So I walked up to one of the guys, and I asked him, you know, I saw these headphones a couple times, you know, these really, really low profile.
Yeah.
So I after seeing it three or four times in a couple different parts of the world, I asked the guys, who makes your headphones? At first I walked up and they were a little like, what are you talking to me for? You know? And, anyway, but to a person, these are called Ear Heroes. And, so earhero.com, and they make them for sports as well. But these ones are, I mean, this one is the security one. They don't have, so the one thing I'm still trying to work out is all the mic, setup. There is no mic kind of built into this. It's just, it's really listen only. What's nice about them is that, you know, they're not $150, so it's not the cheapest set of headsets, but you can hear everything around you. So when you put them in, especially if you're listening to a podcast, you're listening to a music is not the best thing for it. It doesn't have a lot of bass. It's really built for intelligibility around spoken word. So obviously these are designed primarily for comms. So mostly what you're doing is you're plugging these into a radio so that you're able to basically hear everything around you, but also hear people talking to you at the same time. And then the mic system is usually a separate, that's typically what someone's, holding up their hand or grabbing onto their collar or whatever. So that's a separate system. This is just the listening system.
I always like it in the movies when the Secret Service agents are talking into their cuff, like that's somehow covert.
Chief
like,
Twitter's on the move.
Yeah, right. It's like, come on. No one talks into their cuff unless they're a Secret Service agent.
Well, and they have a lot of them have them on. I wouldn't say Secret Service guys, but a lot of folks that do security also have them here, and they'll grab on and talk.
The lapel,
and it's not necessarily. I mean, once you're wearing these, even these are light. There's another layer of this which is wireless that you can put into your ear.
I'd be afraid of losing it in my ear.
No, they have like a little. It actually has a thing that you think is an antenna that is there to pull it out.
It's a little tampon string, right on that thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So anyway, but these are I've been testing these and they're much more comfortable I find than the standard IFB. They're actually much harder to see unless you pull them into the front than when you're looking at stuff than your standard IFB kind of coiled up piece. And the fact that you can hear around it really gives you the ability. I find myself listening to, NPR or TWiT or Marketplace or whatever, walking around at Whole Foods buying food, and I just have it in the background. It's like I have now recreated the audio for wherever I'm at, listening to whatever. I generally mostly listen to spoken word anyway, of some sort. And so
the other thing good about these, they don't block your ear, right? So you can still hear ambient sound.
That's what I'm saying is you're hearing everything around you. You're reactive. You're walking up, and it's just like this little soundtrack in the back of your.
I do that with my hearing aids, which are about that small.
Right.
And you can listen to your audiobooks. They're not, again, the audio is not great, but they're a lot more expensive than Ear Heroes. But
my AirPods are a bit like that. They don't interfere with the sound around you.
You still can see.
I gotta say, I really like this idea of wearing them essentially all day, whether you're necessarily listening to audio at that moment or not. And also, and you don't look like, you don't look like, hey, I've got these things in my ear, so but I'm not paying attention to you whatsoever. And $150 bucks, there are earphones that, in the ear earphones that are at least $20 more expensive than that.
Well, and they don't sound, they're not going to be as good.
It's sexy as hell. No, I know for audio, but it's for spoken word, but that's sexy as hell, I got to say.
They're pretty amazing. So anyway, we spend a lot of time and money on our headsets because we spend a lot of time in comms, for what we do. And so we're always trying to. So this is the best I found so far. And it's great. It's great also because one of the nice things about it I wish more people did was this is actually a short little, connection here so that you can, put this into some other kind of system and you're not committed just to the head, to the one that they sent you. So it's very well designed. Again, primarily for security and so on and so forth. But I think for people who want to have something kind of very low profile that also, if you can hear out that is still wired, I think that's a pretty, it's pretty nifty.
So I want to get the covert tactical ear hero.
Well, that's the one I have. I mean, that's what this is.
Yeah. Cause we didn't see it the whole show.
Right. Well, that's the whole thing. Well, and I think we're going to kind of convert it to when we work with high profile folks. A lot of times, we used to have the big coiled ear thing, and this is going to be, we're going to get a bunch of these.
Then you'll just look like strange people hanging around for no reason. I would want the big headsets myself.
We do a lot of stuff where you're talking to folks. People are having a two-way conversation with someone that's on Skype or on Hangouts or whatever, and you want them just to feel like they're.
He's listening to somebody else. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
I mean, the issue is that it's like when you're doing something like Skype, you think that you want to just leave it open, leave the speakers open with the mic, and
no,
that's the way they tell you, for Hangouts or whatever. Yeah. Skype is worse than Hangouts, but they really, even if it works, it's constantly cutting out, and even if it doesn't cut out, it is degrading the overall audio quality as it tries to do echo cancellation, and it's just really not. You almost always want to wear headphones when you're talking on Skype.
Learned my lesson.
Yeah.
Andy Inako, pick of the week, sir.
Impromptu pick of the week, a really good zippered hoodie.
Yeah, I noticed you putting that on. Is it chilly there? In,
yeah, it's about, it's about 22 degrees. And after 10 minutes of sitting in the outer office, I'm like, okay, I'll spend this break time putting on another layer of socks and the really good, the one that I only wear when I just need, like, I'm shoveling snow or I need the tactical weapon against the coldest. But I have a really... Oh, goodness gracious. So Renee and I should like commiserate about it's going to be even worse when like when Alec moves back out. It's like, great. It's going to be people who are like never experienced anything lower than 50 degrees or higher than 73 degrees versus the people who are like, hi, do not adjust your set. It is, I'm actually kind of blue here. But my pick of the week is really, really timely for this week. A lot of one of my few traditions with my tech column is the last second gift guide, things that you can buy like the day, Christmas day when guests are coming up the sidewalk and you realize that, oh, they brought Stu. I didn't know they were bringing Stuart. I need to get a gift for Stuart. And one of the best things you can give for anybody who is anyway interested in comics or not interested in comics, but they like the Marvel films, is a gift subscription to Marvel Unlimited. This is one of the greatest subscription services of any kind ever. It is for about $60 a year. You can buy a gift subscription for $60 for 1 year, and you get access to 17,000 digital comics by Marvel, where basically everything they publish hits this service about six months to a year after it hits the stands, sometimes even less time. And they are diligently filling in their back catalog. So if you are really into what Marvel is doing right now, it is probably the only affordable way to keep up with one of their annual event series, because each Marvel comics are $4 per copy, and the event itself is 8 issues, but you have to buy another 13 or 14 comics a month just to follow what the story really is. So if you're willing to wait, that's how now I read Marvel comics. I just can't afford to spend I can't take the risk that I'm spending $80 or $90 to read the story and there's really no ending to it. I don't really like it, but I'm perfectly happy to spend $70 a year and then read it 6 months later. But not only that, but it means that you can read all of John Byrne's Fantastic Four. You can read I think that Walt Simonson's Thor is up there. All of Fantastic, really every era of Fantastic Four from Jack Kirby all the way up to Kirkman. You can, when you read online, someone talk about, oh boy, I wish the Fantastic Four were as good as when Kirkman was writing it, or I wish wasn't it great when Dan Slott first took over Spider-Man. You don't have to buy $20 trade paper. You can just click into your tablet, download all the issues from that run, and then just read them page after page after page. You have access to the entire library. You can read them live and stream it, so to speak, issue by issue. I think that you can download as many as 12 issues from your personal library as you build your library to your device, whether it's your iPhone, your iPad, Android, or whatever. After that, you have to start removing things from your iPad, but you will still have great stuff to read after you board your plane. I really think that it's one of the things that makes reading comics in this day and age just fantastic. I have a lot of complaints about how Marvel publishes their stories and how they tell their stories, but they're pretty much all negated by the fact that, well, if you think that comics are too expensive, if you think that you never know how many you have to buy to get the story, if you're okay with waiting 6 months and essentially read them all for just $70 a year, and it's all you can eat, and you can also buy gift subscriptions. You have to kind of scroll down to find it on the page on the link that I gave you, but you can give a gift subscription, and that's the sort of thing where, again, when you find out that your cousin brought their kids and everyone is giving gifts to the kids, it's an easy thing to just run upstairs, run a distraction play with your spouse while you run upstairs and make the gift subscription and make the purchase, and then come back downstairs with a sheet of paper with a code on it. So really great stuff. I've been using Marvel Unlimited since they only had 4,000 comics in the library, and I'm a really, really happy customer.
Very nice indeed. Renee Ritchie, I'm already playing your pick of the week. I am playing it on Windows, but it has the downloadable content that Apple is giving, or Mojang is giving you, the Christmas.
Yeah, so
content.
My pick is this. So as much as Nintendo is my generation, Minecraft is sort of too late for me, and I never got back into the game, into Minecraft, so I'm not where Leo is either. But Minecraft came to Apple TV this week, and it's sort of been one of those things that is long. There was long promise and people were looking forward to it. And it turned out really, really well. We had one of our editors, Lori Gill, take a look at it. And she really, really liked it. You do need one of these, which is a controller. And I recommend the Steel Series by Nimbus.
Yeah, you know, I have I had a Steel Series Strata XL. And I was trying to play it on the Apple TV. And it worked sort of.
Yeah, it's the Nimbus that you really want.
I think the problem was I had the iOS, the Android version or something. Yeah, I want to get the Nimbus. That's the one I want to get, huh?
Yeah, and it's a good controller. It's a good experience. It looks good. It fits the control scheme for the platform. It's not a huge departure for anyone who's played on any other platform. It's just nice to be able to sit in the living room. And if you have an Apple TV, just put it right on the Apple TV and just enjoy Minecraft to the full extent of the virtual Lego universe.
Sit down here in the Christmas pub and just watch you play. I have to say, I like the... Now, the problem with it is that Minecraft for the Apple TV is $20, which seems...
Yeah, I mean, that gets back into the economy where people want to make money. I mean, the tradition of video games is you buy the game for whatever, like $60, $20, whatever it was. And there are companies who are really locked into that model. And I'd hate to say you can't do that with video games anymore because games are super expensive to make. And I want them to continue making big blockbuster games. And we'll spend $20 on our ticket to go see the new Star Wars movie that's done in 2 hours. And this will give you arguably longer entertainment value than that will.
Yeah.
So it's a perception issue, really. But I don't think it'll change unless there are a series of really, really good $20 games that people just get rewarded for the experience and are willing to get them.
The game packs that they throw in, the downloadable content they throw in, is actually great. Like this Christmas thing is really great. So it's, you know, it makes up for it a little bit. It's funny because you could get it for $10 on Windows. This is, by the way, the Pocket Edition of Minecraft.
Yeah.
Without Realms support, they say that's coming later. And without Xbox support, they say that's coming later. But the Windows version is going up to $26 soon. And you still have to pay $3 or $4 for the downloadable content. So, which I did, though, happily. Because, hey, it's Christmas in Minecraft land.
Windows and Office can't fund everything at Microsoft anymore.
Look at that. All the little snowflakes. Just so
it's a lot of fun, and it gets people into the living room, especially at the holidays. Not everyone is staring at their phone. Not everyone is locked in their room with their computer.
They're staring at you playing video games. Yay!
Well, I mean, like you can just watch your. Like, it's almost a joke, right? Like the kids playing Minecraft while watching YouTube videos of someone playing Minecraft. But this at least lets you sort of join in the experience with your kid if you really want to.
I don't know. Is this a gingerbread man I just harvested? I wonder if I can eat it.
It's a Santa Pikachu.
I guess.
Oh, no, my worlds are colliding.
A good
You can
pick.
Go to a Lego store and buy Minecraft Lego, which is really the world turning back on itself.
Isn't that? That's really strange.
Yeah.
So how much is the Nimbus? Because I think I'm going to buy one.
I think it's $49, if I remember correctly. It's like $49, but it's a really well-built. Like anyone who's had a Sony or an Xbox controller will feel right at home with this. It's exceptionally well made. I've had mine since the Apple TV launched, and it's still perfect condition, works really well, double thumbsticks, all the controls you would imagine on a normal gamepad.
My most important question before I buy it, handle being thrown to a carpeted floor in disgust.
Well, I mean, if you aim for the TV, it's better because then you can break everything at once.
You won't have disgust with Minecraft. There's nothing disgusting about Minecraft unless you do something stupid like to fall into lava with all your stuff. Not that I would ever do that. Or thank you, everybody. You guys are great.
Yay.
This is our last show of 2016.
Aw.
Next week is the best of that we've been compiling with your help. It's going to be a great show, and all of you appear in it. We will then be back on January 3rd. No, yeah, 3rd for the 2017 edition of Break Weekly. I know.
It's a whole year from now, Leo. That's not a bad thing. Like, have you ever thought that, thank God I don't have to think about it is no longer 2016.
Yeah.
I at this point, I'm not even expecting that I will still be alive on January 1st. It's not a great year for anybody.
No. Yeah, anybody could pass. at any moment.
Oh, we haven't seen 2017 yet, so I'm not going to.
Well, that's
say
my that's yeah. my that's my fear. Yeah. We it's conceivable we'll look back nostalgically on how wonderful 2016 was.
Just, oh, you think that in 2017 someone will bring David Bowie back to life and then kill him all over again?
Oh
no, I'm thinking they got out when they knew the opportunity was there.
They're somewhere performing and enjoying a Christmas classic like this.
You see what's coming? We're out of here.
Thank you so much is my sound on? Because I don't want to miss this audio. Let me turn the sound on.
That's legitimately great. I think that some people are like sarcastic about it, but
oh, I'm not.
The greatest vocalist of the 20th century with one of the also I think one of the greatest pop vocalists of the 20th century.
Yeah,
it's just actually, they're both pop vocalists. But yeah,
Bing Crosby and David Bowie. A newborn
king to see Barabba. I enjoy this unironically.
No, it's a little weird. It's a Bing Crosby special. It's a little bit weird when Bing Crosby goes to the door and says, "Oh, it's David Bowie. Come on in, David. And let's sing a song together." But it's absolutely a beautiful version of this song.
That voice. Both of them.
You got your baritone. You got your tenor. Anyway, have a wonderful holiday, everybody. We'll be back in 2017. We'll see you then with Andy Iannacco from the Chicago Sun-Times, Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. And I hope if Alex Lindsay doesn't get busy with the heads of state or famous YouTubers, he'll be back from time to time.
You know, one day he'll just render himself and we won't know the difference. Like virtual Alex will show up and we won't know.
Could have happened already.
Right? I know.
Right? We don't know. Anyway, thank you all for being here. We do Mac Break Weekly, and we will be back with a brand new show next week. It'll be best of, in the sense that it's the highlights of 2016. But those are always fun to watch and listen to. We do it live normally at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1900 UTC on Tuesdays. Please stop by and say hi. We have a lovely studio audience here today, rather large one, considering. If you want to be here, though, we'll put a chair out for you. You just got to email tickets at twit.tv because we don't want Mo, our security guard, to shoot you on the way in. It's embarrassing when that happens.
Got to clean the carpet.
Yeah. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I'm a kidder. Thank you all for coming. Have a great holiday. Happy New Year. We'll see you in 2017. But now for now, anyway, time to get back to work because break time is over.